You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
LaFondra looking to get close side of Font. LaFondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to the Unparked Roles podcast preview supported by Phantom Bruco. I think this is a part one of two parts of a podcast because it has been a very eventful week in the world of Reading FC and it's been insanely negative. But to help me talk through it, I will have been joined by James Earnshaw from the Reading Chronicle. How you doing?
Good morning, Paul. Yeah, I guess we're surviving, taking things half a day at a time. And touch wood, so far this morning's not been too bad. Let's see what the afternoon brings.
Yeah, we are in that kind of scenario. I mean, it seems ridiculous, but it is such a fast-flowing craziness. Mm. But let's go back now to Wednesday night. When, thankfully, thank God, I was actually asleep when this came out. But wow, if you were awake when this news broke that Wycombe Wanderers are set to buy Bearwood, I can imagine you would have got zero sleep, James, because that is just a bolt out of the blue that none of us expected.
Yeah, well, I was asleep at the time too, because I just got back from Derby the night before at 2:30 in the morning. So I thought, oh, sod this, I need to get an early night. Woke up, needed a pee. Checked my phone, I had 19 missed messages and missed calls. I thought, oh God, something must have gone down here. And stupidly decided to check it at 4:30 in the morning rather than just leave it till the morning. Didn't get back to sleep after that. So it was up from about 4:30 till, about 11 o'clock last night. And it was certainly probably one of the busiest days I've had. Pretty draining and demoralising. Not nice to see such division, especially, between a club that I actually quite liked. Nothing surprises us with Reading these days.
Yeah, I remember on the preview for the Wycombe match, I was definitely saying that they're not a local rival, they're not in a derby match. Well, I think we can definitely say the intensity on that match has rapidly increased. Obviously, if it happens, because who knows what's going to happen with Reading FC. I mean, obviously, I don't want to talk about us being liquidated or anything, but administration does seem a strong possibility now. That's not gloomy as well. Maybe it's the best route. I don't know. But you've also told us this morning on Twitter that Wycombe were actually at the training ground in November. And do you have any more details on that?
No, not really. Just had a couple of messages from people that kind of would know. So it's certainly not been the last minute decision to fund this 1 million shortfall to raise 22 million by selling a £50 million asset at the club, of kind of the crowning jewel in the club. It's been calculated. It's been, chosen and offered. And so not a great look for those that already have their reputation in the mud, and rightfully so, I guess. The likes of Dai Young and Dai Young Pang.
Yes, Mr. Kohig, also at Wycombe Wanderers, definitely in the mud 100% for me. I can't say I've got any time for that club or anything now. As I've seen, there's lots of other clubs that feel exactly the same about Wycombe Wanderers. I've only discovered this, really, the complete dislike for them. I mean, as I said before, never really that bothered by them before. And now all of a sudden, they seem to have gone very, I wouldn't say top of the list, but they're definitely getting towards it now, aren't they? Yeah, my mood is just sadness, isn't it? It is utter sadness and kind of, I don't know where we're heading. I don't know what the next plan is. You don't know what's going to happen the next day or hour. I mean, are these the last five matches or so? Or sorry, eight or nine matches? Are these the last three or four matches at home? This is a scenario that we could only have nightmares about at the beginning of the season. But now we're drifting into the reality of it, James. And I just don't see an end to it right now.
Yeah, it's the hopelessness that's the worst part. It's the fact that there's nothing that we can do about it. You know, we've had 8 months of protests and, you know, we've been in every paper and every radio station. And, you know, I'm back on some more this weekend as well to try and keep raising the profile. And ultimately, as we kind of knew all along, that it's all down to one man, whether he wants to sell or not. You know, we've had buyers queuing up around the block. There's still some buyers around that are still interested even to this day. But if he's not willing to negotiate with them and not willing to sell, then I'm afraid there's only one way it's going to end, and it's not positively.
No, it's not at all. From your knowledge, James, do you think there's actually buyers still interested, despite the fact that the training ground might not be part of the deal, which is completely insane because, you know, we'll come on to that later, how that works out. But what's your latest on that?
Yeah, I know of three or four that are still very much keen. I know people were brought to to the CEO and to Nigel Howe as recently as sort of Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, for discussions and for talks. But so far, it's kind of been a bit of a wall of silence coming back on the other way, which is a frustrating thing. You know, the club have worked hard and loads of staff have brought potential buyers. You know, obviously, we're kind of back to square one again in terms of needing to go through due diligence and all that kind of lark. But yeah, you know, the frustrating thing is there are people out there that want to try and help and want to try and save us. And the one man that's got the power is choosing not to, which is pretty despicable, in the nicest word.
Well, there's nothing nice about that at all, is there, really? You can dress it up. But Dai Yong Pang, wow. I mean, he was disliked before and now he's completely hated, isn't he? Dai Yong as well, exactly the same. Nothing has changed. I'm going to read out some of the questions now because they've come in from Reading fans who listen to the pod. Someone says they love listening to the podcast while I'm gardening. Thank you, Jonathan. I'm really, really hope you aren't actually like going out there and attacking plants right now while you're listening to this and like butchering your garden. Leave it to grow. Now the goalposts have moved drastically. What's actually on offer to a potential buyer of the football club? And is there a glimmer of hope of a Mike Ashley type deal swoops in on the cheap? What do you think, James?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, the main thing you're buying is the club and the reputation and the history and, you know, the players and whatever else. We're led to believe that the stadium is still, you know, willing to be moved on with the club. But, you know, nobody can say that with any confidence because until Tuesday, we were under the impression that Bear Wood was part of the deal as well. So, you know, I can only go with what I understand and what I'm told. And as far as I'm aware, he's willing to sell the SCL with the club. But the one thing you're guaranteed, obviously, is the history and the fan base and the club and the town that's, you know, that's desperate for a football club. Other than that, everything, I guess, is on a whim and a prayer and whatever mood Dai wakes up on that morning.
Yeah, you're totally right there. I'm just looking at these questions here and they are very bleak, as you would expect. They really are. And I totally understand the people's mood. It really is such a difficult time. There's people here saying, can we have a special section, you know, which actually gives us hope. At the moment, no. I'd like to give us some hope. I really would. James, can you give us any hope at the moment? I'm genuinely struggling. I really wish I could. Maybe they will come in. But one of the main attractions for buying Reading was the training ground. And now that's gone. Or set to go, hasn't gone officially yet.
Yeah, true. You know, it was a big major selling point, and losing it to a divisional rival is obviously a pain as well. But, you know, having travelled around all of the League One clubs this year, it's safe to say that Reading will be able to find an adequate replacement on par with many, many League One clubs. I mean, the amount of clubs that just literally have a field attached to the side of the stadium that they use as their training ground is unbelievable. So, you know, the council have been very good with us for Sell Before We Die. I'm sure they will help where they can. And, you know, there are, I'm sure, discussions, you know, as the statement said, about where we're going to train. Ultimately, when you think about all the successful years that, you know, Reading have had, Hogwood was a field with a few porter cabins. You know, Reading trained at Bisham Abbey sort of in the earlier 2000s. Obviously, the problem is now we're kind of going back 30 years while the rest of the world has come forward. But, you know, it's a patch of grass at the end of the day. It's all about the coaching staff and the players you've got. You've got to make the best of it. You know, obviously from next summer onwards, wherever we end up, providing we're still in existence, players will be aware that that's the situation and they just got to get on with it. I mean, we're still a highly attractive League One club, should we stay up, especially if we were to get new owners and the sort of feel-good factor and the fans were to bounce back from what's been a pretty disastrous last 3 or 4 years. You know, so it's not all doom and gloom. It's looking at it now because, you know, we're not in control and there's, you know, it's a pain because there's no real answers right now. But for as long as there are still people interested, then there's always got to be hope.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember being on, I'm not filling up more upbeat there, James. You've done a cracking job, I've got to say. It's all going to be okay. There's a song about that. But
I didn't go that far.
No, no, I know you didn't. I'm putting words into your mouth there. No, you definitely didn't do that. Yeah, I remember speaking to my new best mate, Simon Jordan, on Talk Sport the other day when he talked about how when he bought the club there and he had the didn't have a training ground and how he moved on to. Of course, this was a main opportunity for Simon Jordan to talk about how great he was. But, you know, he does enjoy that. But I don't know. There's another one here from someone who's a listener. Someone saying, totally gutted from David Lee. Worth breaking it to my 7-year-old who's a proud season ticket holder. But there has got to be some better news coming for the Royals at some point. Training ground is bad, of course, but still, someone has to come in. This is what we hope, David. Hopefully, someone at some point will come in and take the club away from Die Young. That's ultimately what we want. It may be the case that we end up in League Two, but we would still have a team and we wouldn't have Die Young there. And when you go back to what you're saying about the training ground, when you look at Brentford, being promoted to the Premier League. I've been past there. My relative used to live right next to their training ground. It's not the best in the world by anywhere. It's nowhere near Bearwood. So it isn't everything, but it's the way this deal has been done. It's the way it's kind of, oh, we can't sell the club, but we can sell a bit of it. It's completely, it's so slight and just horrendous.
Yeah, similar to how we had Bearwood and progressively year on year got worse. You can also, on the other hand, therefore have a worse training ground, but still get a better. It's about the quality of the staff and the players and, you know, the spirit and making the best of the situation that you've got. And ultimately, you know, you can have all the nice plush training grounds in the world. If you're not winning football matches, it doesn't really matter. Obviously, it helps. And it's obviously it was a selling point for owners, no doubt about that. But, you know, we had 8 months where supposedly Bearwood was on the table and things still didn't progress. So I don't see Bearwood as being the key thing. Obviously, it makes it less attractive now, possibly, but it should, on the other hand, therefore make it cheaper for another buyer. So it should open up routes for maybe some people that weren't necessarily in the frame that couldn't afford it with Bearwood that maybe not, might be able to now afford it.
Yeah. I mean, you could be right. You could be right. But we will see on that one. Probably find out more about that this afternoon. I mean, I joke about that. I have absolutely no information. But it feels like news could break at any moment. What we also saw today is one of the partners of the first team players, Lewis Wing. Yasmin De La Rose coming out saying that basically every day's been a bit crap. She went off the back of one of our tweets, which I'm not going to read out the whole thing because nobody wants to hear that. But she basically says, my family and I joined Reading with excitement, being able to find ourselves and be part of a family club with an exciting future. It's been based on lies since day one. I don't know what other players' partners are thinking about this, but they must be affected by it as well, James.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, as we're affected by it, I'm sure they all are. You know, it's their lives as well. You know, I know they are footballers, but, you know, they do have emotions. So, yeah, you know, it can't be a nice situation at all, but you know, the players can't be knocked at all. You know, the effort they've put in and the quality of performances they've continued to put in, despite the off-field situation progressively getting worse, has been admirable. So, yeah, just stick with it, I guess, and see where we are in the summer.
Yes, one thing I can say about the team, and I know that we lost at Derby during the week. I mean, we're almost 15 minutes here, and we might actually mention the game in a minute here, but it is a crazy situation that we're in, James, that we've lost at Derby. You had the referee from refereeing hell, isn't it, basically? One of the worst I think I've seen in many, many years. But I still think the team, just on actual on-the-field performances, could stay up. What happens off the pitch could massively affect that, but I don't think it's impossible.
Oh, God, no. No, I think the players are in a fine position to stay up. We've got winnable home games. You know, maybe nick a point or two on the road. I can't see anyone in the bottom four picking up 50 points. So providing that some of this die money at least gets us through to the end of the season without having more points deductions, which you'd like to think the bare minimum is where that 22 million is going, then, yeah, I think on the pitch we're good enough. But again, the fear obviously is that there's only so much these players can take. And is there a tipping point where they're going to start getting demoralised and it's going to finally show through in their performances? Because to date it hasn't. But everyone, I guess, has a breaking point. And could this latest news be the one? I hope not. You know, they've only got a month to go to make it through to the end of the season, a month and a half. So if they can just dig in, you know, keep out the outside noise for that much longer, I think they should stay up quite comfortably in the end.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that thing that's pinging on the background isn't actually bad news. That's what we don't want.
My work call. Sorry, it's work.
Yeah, so let's get to the game on Saturday. Briefly, I'm just going to ask you for a prediction. I'm not going into too much detail about it. What do you think against Cambridge?
What do I think? It's always harder playing a team that's just been spanked 6-0. They're going to want to go out, you know, and put things right. It's a bit hard to judge, isn't it, with Gary Monk. He's only just gone in there, really. He's got two games, a draw and a 6-0 loss. But it's a game we've got to win. Ultimately, it is a must-win, however you dress it up. They're below us on goal difference. We really need to start taking advantage of these games of teams around us. So far, we've now lost at home to Wickham and Shrewsbury when both have been immediately around us. If we lose this one as well, then we really are, I think, bang in trouble. I think it's a must-win. However they do it, I don't really care how they perform, as long as they get that ball in the net more times than Cambridge do.
That's a simplistic view, and I completely agree with it. Let's just go for the Kevin Keegan approach. I'm going to go for 2-1. I can also see how it could end up really bad because this has just been such a draining week. But we will see how it goes. Now it will be Matt talking to a Cambridge United fan. Thank you very much for listening. And let's just hope at some point in the near future, we're talking about more positive things. Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to part two of the Elm Park Royals preview podcast, brought to you, of course, by Phantom Brew Co. We are switching now onto the view from the opposition. We're taking a look at Cambridge United this weekend. To do so, I'm joined by Jules from the Under the Abbey Stand podcast. How are you doing there, Jules?
How are you doing, Matt? Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Blocking out everything Reading FC, but this segment is about Cambridge. I'm seemingly saying that every single week at the moment. I will change my intro at some point and what I'm saying. Not too bad. I think there's one place to start, because I think we can only start in one place. When we last played you guys, because so much has happened there in the world of Cambridge. We think a lot has happened at Reading FC this season. Cambridge, there's obviously been a lot of topsy-turvy goings on, managers coming and going, etc. When we last played you, you guys obviously won in the 83rd minute. It was a
Okunbinre.
That's the one. Scored in the 83rd minute. Quite quite a fantastic win. I remember being there. It was quite an atmosphere over at your place. And that left you sixth in the table. It was it seemed like a tough place to go. Mark Bonner obviously started very well with you guys, but then it kind of went downhill from that game, and I think led to a run of one win. It was in 13 or 14 games in the league, which then led to Mark Bonner sadly departing Cambridge United, a person that was so instilled really in Cambridge United history. What happened during that run? What was it like following that Reading game?
Do you know what? It's funny because the main reason for getting sacked wasn't just the run of form. It was the fact that the start of this season, if you take August through to about November, which is when he ended up getting sacked, this season and last season followed identical patterns. We started in August. We were in the top three or four, both last year and this year. You have a decent enough September. You sort of drop a few points, but to decent sides, and you're always knocking about in the top half, and everyone's thinking, right, brilliant. What a season we're about to have here. We're just going to cruise to a sort of mid-table finish. And then you go on this run of form where it's not just that you're losing to, because I think, you know, we can understand that we're probably still a small fish in terms of our budget and our expectations aren't. I don't think we're sort of trying to, you know, punch above our stations or anything like that, or thinking that, you know, we're bigger than we are. But it's not just the fact that you're losing games. It's just you're not even landing punches in games, and you're just rolling over. And the amount of times I've seen us do that, and taking the Bonner run specifically, the same thing was happening as the season before. And the season before, we stuck with him all the way through, even when the run got worse and worse and worse until about March, and we were 9 points adrift, and we still stuck with him. And he ended up keeping us up on the last day, and we stayed up by points. So it was his faith. Our faith in him was rewarded. But this year, I think they just couldn't risk that happening again. So the idea was, they were seeing the same trends happen this year, having been backed quite heavily in the transfer market, I will add, this summer. And we lost 5-0 at Posh, which is our derby, which is a horrible feeling. And then lost 2-1 to Northampton the week after, and 3-0 to Lincoln the week after that. And then that was enough. The board had seen enough. And it was a real, I mean, 4 years as first team manager, but like a 20-year association with a football club, it was really hard to see it come to an end, but it just felt like the end of a chapter. And it felt like if we were serious about becoming a stable League One football club, we just had to make a different choice, make a difficult decision and make a step up. And it felt like that's what we did. And, you know, I will preface, like, you know, I'm sure you're about to ask about the rest of the season, and it has been a topsy-turvy season. Mm-hmm. If I was speaking to any other fan apart from a Reading fan, I would really ham that up. But compared to, you know, you guys, I think I can count myself lucky that we're just looking at how many points we need to stay up and nothing bigger than that. So, but yeah, it has been a bit of a wild season.
Was it, so 20 years, obviously, association. He joined you, obviously, when you were kind of, I guess, in the depths of League Two, you know, fearing relegation back to the National League, brought you up to League One, kind of solidified you, I guess, in League One. Sentiment around Mark Bonner, was it just kind of right time to move on from him at that point?
It's pretty split, to be honest. I think a lot of people had an attachment to him that's quite different to a lot of other managers, you know, being a fan and a season ticket holder when he was a kid and all this sort of stuff. Like, you develop an attachment to someone that is slightly unique to other managers. I mean, he lived like the fairy tale, right, as a manager. And I think even now there's still a bit of division about, I mean, you know, people have had to move on because we're on our second manager since him, unfortunately, which is, again, outside of our own control. But I think with Bonner, I think most people, especially people going home and away, I think last year was tough, and it was the right decision to stay with him. Fundamentally, we stayed up, which was the end goal with the season. But like over the course, if you take our form from like October last year, what would that be, 2022, through to when he got sacked, like the amount of games we'd lost in that time, it's quite hard to like really support a bloke wholeheartedly to be your manager when you're just losing so many games of football. And I think then also what compounded that was how well backed he was in the summer. We went out and we really sort of changed the caliber of player, or at least the pedigree of player we were signing. And you could tell that they'd injected a lot of money in the wage budget to do that, to try and repeat what happened last year. So I think the owners were just a bit like, look, it might just be a step too far for you at this stage of your career, and you know the club's got to come first, unfortunately. So I think it's such a shame to see him go. Some of the best memories of my life supporting Cambridge were under him, but fundamentally I want to be a League One club for as long as we can and keep building around that. Our attendances have nearly doubled in the last 3 years in terms of the average. We've got new ground plans ready to be submitted to increase the overall capacity. So like everything is in a great spot, and we just need to stay in League One as much as possible, as long as possible. So yeah, it was really tough to see him go, but right decision in the end.
Yeah, well, the man tasked with that turnaround was obviously Neil Harris, former Gillingham manager. For one reason or another, never fully took off at Gillingham with him. It was kind of a always pushing playoffs, never achieving at Gillingham, but obviously made the step up from League Two back to League One.
Yeah.
Obviously very capable manager at League One with Millwall, obviously, in the past. But didn't last too long.
No.
What was Neil Harris saga like at Cambridge United?
Well, to be honest, it's such a unique case, this, because I think first of all, you're following a guy like Mark Bonner because of everything I just said, was always going to be a tough ask, whoever it was, because you're really having to win round a fan base, I think. Even the people who wanted it to happen, like myself, and I think thought it was the right decision. After 4 years, it feels weird seeing someone else in the dugout, right? And you sort of have to, like, it's like breaking up with a girlfriend. You've just, like, it takes a moment to, like, sort of readjust to whoever you meet after that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was always going to be a weird task, but I actually thought Neil Harris was absolutely the perfect person for the job. It was an 18-month contract. So it was not really a long committal thing. It was very much on the lines of, here's a guy who can steady the ship, who knows what he's doing at this level, exactly as you just said, and we'll be able to stabilize us basically for a couple of seasons, and then we can go from there. He's a guy who carries himself in a very different way to Mark Bonner. He's got like a sort of he's got a ruthlessness about him that I think we really needed in that squad at that stage, and. It started, I think people were a bit critical at first because he'd come from Gillingham. I mean, he'll be the first to point out that they were basically in the playoffs when he got sacked, and he got sacked for, he was doing absolutely fine with Gillingham. Gillingham fans still rated him even afterwards. We spoke to them recently and they were like, yeah, we'd probably still have Harris back if we had the choice. So it was an odd sacking even from Gillingham. And then obviously he moves up a division. So I think there was a bit of like, well, hang on, couldn't we have got someone couldn't we have aimed a bit higher, I guess was the feeling. But I think that clouded over like the actual the benefits of someone like Neil Harris, and he basically did exactly what we were expecting him to do. He did that. He stabilized us. Like, we beat most of the teams that we were expected to beat. Our points per game was like in the 1.3 1.4, which is pretty decent. Like, you stay up pretty comfortably with that. You finish about 16th, yeah, something like that. So like it was nothing, nothing sort of flashy, nothing. Yeah. It wasn't like a particularly like ambitious appointment, sure, but I don't think we needed it. And then, just when we're sort of getting used, we just won 4-0 up at Carlisle. We'd gone for a little bit of a bad run of form, under Harris, won 4-0 up at Carlisle. And then Tuesday night we played Bolton at home, rearranged game from a game that got called off after 8 minutes because of a downpour like I've never ever seen before. So play them, we're 1-0 up at half time, and at that stage it's like, well, we're about 10 points clear of the drop, we're something like 16th, all is fine with the world. Fast forward an hour, Lara Taylor, our best player, has got himself sent off, suspended for 3 games, including the derby, and then we find out at full time that Neil Harris has been offered the Millwall job, and he'd made a promise to the late John Berylson that if Millwall ever came calling, he'd answer, and they were in a bit of trouble in the Championship, so he felt that he had to go. I think it's tricky because I think everyone understands that and understands it on sort of a both a human and a professional level, but that is still a hard one to swallow, because what's happened since then is, well, we haven't won since then. And he's left a squad who signed for a guy and are now on their second manager since then. We were left completely in the lurch. It's different to when you're, you know, with Bonner, you probably start thinking about appointments or potential replacements a little bit before, not, oh, by the way, I'm leaving tomorrow, and you've got to sort out a new manager now. And it's late February. It's like such a weird time to appoint a manager. You've got a team that could very easily still go down. So you're sort of not even promising League One football. It's not a squad that anyone's built. It's a really odd situation, and that's sort of what's happened since then. We've managed to, well, we haven't managed to pick up anywhere near enough points to keep ourselves away from this relegation battle. So yeah, we're right in it.
What followed that was obviously five games, one draw in that five losses, one draw. I got there in the end.
Yeah.
I got there in the end. I do apologise. and one thing that has obviously been a massive trouble is goal scoring for you guys in that time. One manager that obviously has come in, though, since, it was a very interesting appointment, I thought, because Gary Monk, fantastic at Swansea, did a brilliant job there. For whatever reason, it just worked. Likewise with Middlesbrough and Leeds United when he was at those clubs. I know they both have their opinions of them. I remember when we played Leeds back when we were pushing for playoffs, and they were, Leeds United fans weren't overly convinced with him and his style of football, but it got them to the playoffs. Since then, Birmingham, Sheffield Wednesday, not really worked out for him, I think it's fair to say. Not been in management since the end of 2020. What was it like when you saw his name brought into the fold for Cambridge? Was it excitement?
Do you know what, mate? It's really hard to say because of the sort of unique nature of the way Harris left. I'm not sure what name would have really excited me. Because it's just such a bizarre time of the season to be looking for a manager that you haven't got rid of yourself, if you know what I mean, that someone's left you for the Championship. Such a bizarre set of circumstances that I'm not entirely sure who would have properly excited me. The big names knocking about early doors were like Michael Duff and Gary Rowett, but the job's too volatile for them in terms of like the way this job looks in 3 months could be so different to the way it would have looked a couple of weeks ago. So I don't think we were ever really fishing in that pond. So I think if you look below it, Monk, of the options we had, which were like Mark Kennedy, the ex-Lincoln manager, the guy who has done a brilliant job at Bromley, but like that's a huge risk to come into League One. Andy Woodman, his name is. So there was like names like this floating about, and I don't think anyone can be disappointed by Monk, a guy with that sort of pedigree. But as you say, he's been out of the game for 3.5 years. That's one worry. Mm-hmm. We've spoken to his fan bases. We did a piece on our website about speaking to a few of his ex-fan bases. Actually, the one thing you got wrong there is that Birmingham fans love him. He's like the messiah.
Do they?
There. Yeah, they absolutely love him because he took them over in a relegation battle with exactly 11 games of the season to go, which is the same situation we're in. They were like 6 points adrift, I think, maybe 5 points adrift. Kept them up pretty comfortably in the end. They won like 6 of their last 11 games. And then the next year they were under like crazy FFP rules, and they had this, I mean, you know, your listeners will smirk at this. They had this crazy owner from abroad who was doing everything he could to jeopardize the club. And
Crazy owners from abroad.
He didn't really seem to care about the club at all. Yeah, weird. And they were under huge financial difficulties, and they had this FFP rules, so they couldn't sign any players permanently. They had they could only sign a few loan players and a few free agents, and they were basically top half for the first half of the season. Then they got 9 point, then they got 12 point deduction. Theirs was 9 points, and then that put them back in a relegation battle. He kept them up again, and then he left in the summer because he was like, I'm not working with this guy anymore. But Birmingham fans always thought that he'd done incredibly well for them, and he really understood the club and the culture of the club. And it was just, if under a different owner, it would have worked out much, much better. Same with at Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday fans don't like him because he never really did a lot with them. But he was working under really difficult circumstances with Chanziri there, who, as we've seen a few times, is a troubling owner himself. The big thing he kept saying when he joined us, because he took time out after Sheffield Wednesday, the big thing he kept saying in his interviews, and he said it a few times since his like introductory one, is how he was always looking for a club that was stable and had a stable ownership structure. And that's the one thing that we have, which is why I do think we're a bit more of an attractive opposition as long as we can keep our League One status, because we've got two American investors who own 20% of the club, and then a local boy, Dunwell, who's a Boyhood fan, who's 80% chairman. His name's Paul Barry. And I think for Monk, he's got a guy, I think he can see a guy that he can really work with in the long term there, and that's, he sort of hedged his bets maybe a step lower than he'd wanted to come to us. But I think he feels like there's a project here and he's got an owner that he can work with in the long run, which is fine. And I'm quite excited by the idea of Monk building a team this summer, because I think if the resources are there like they were last summer with some of the players we have and the wages they're on, which isn't crazy, but it's enough, then I expect Monk to be able to build a really competitive team next year. The problem is he's inherited a side that's bang out of form, no confidence, really poorly recruited squad, which is a whole thing that we won't go into. Players that don't seem to care or want to play for the shirt, that are just spiraling. And I don't think we need that many points. I think we need like 5 points over the next, I honestly think that will probably just about keep us up. But where
I'd say you're around 44 or 45 points, I'd say, stay up. Yeah,
I agree. And I just think you ask any Cambridge fan, they just cannot see where those points are coming from right now. And I don't blame that on Monk. I don't know what Pep Guardiola would do this team right now, to be honest, if he came in. So everyone's very worried. And I think if we can get to the summer, our excitement levels will change rapidly on Monk. And no one's, it's impossible to have an opinion on him, really.
What's that, the main thing? Yeah. what's the main thing, do you think, then, that Monk needs to change? Apart from the obvious, getting wins, getting results, what does Monk need to do with this team to start delivering results?
This team's utterly spineless. Honestly, it's completely spineless. Like, you can go and watch the highlights last night. We lost 6-0 at Lincoln. Now, I know they're a decent side and they put 5 past Barnsley. And I think even on our best day, the form they're in, they probably would have beat us anyway. But just the ease at which they can score goals, it's half of it. I suppose the half worrying thing is, like, the one thing you'd expect of Gary Monk as a centre-back with 300-400 career appearances and Premier League experience, and you'd expect him to make us quite organised. But that didn't seem to be apparent last night. But more than anything, something I've seen so much from this team all season under 3 different managers plus a caretaker, we go 1-0 down, game's done. And the best period was when Harris first took over. I think it was 3 or 4 games within about 5. We came back from 1-0 down to get some points, a point or three against like Charlton and Blackpool. We did it against someone else. I can't remember who it is off the top of my head now. But apart from that little spell, this team, their heads drop instantly. They've got no bottle about them. There's no... we're just so easy to play against. And then when we get the ball, we're so slow and laboured. You can tell what sort of a mood Cambridge fans are in at the moment. Like, this team, there's no attachment between fans and players, barring like a couple. The players don't really look like they're playing for us or for the club or for even their own careers. We are absolutely, it's not just limping to the line, we're like crawling one hand, like shot in both legs to the line and trying to pick up, scramble anything we can. So Monk just needs to just stick a rocket up their ass, to be honest, and just like make them realise that like these guys aren't going to have a career after this. If it fails for them at Cambridge, like, where the fuck are they going to go next? Sorry for swearing. Yeah. But like they need to realise that they need to play for themselves, not even just a football club. Like someone like Jordan Cousins, I mean, he's one of the most, he's probably our highest paid player. He's got 200-300 championship appearances. We signed him in the summer and all the word was like, if you keep him fit, you've got a hell of a player on your hands. I literally don't know if I've seen a worse player since our like conference days play for us. And he's clearly got the ability. You don't play 300 times in the championship as a 30-year-old without having the ability. He's just not applying it at all in any games. He's directly responsible for goals like every week. Anyway, yeah, basically there's a lot he needs to do. He needs to just find a way to scrape some points over the line. And he needs to just try and make them care a little bit more, because I think deep down there's enough quality, but they need to sort of try and show it.
Well, 2 players that could obviously be key for getting you over the line, however you get over the line, could be Lyle Taylor and obviously Elias Kachunga. You've switched to a 4-4-2 or playing 4-4-2 seemingly. Obviously at the moment they're your strike partnership up front, pretty much.
It's a bit like what you were telling me about Nibs and Smith. Kachunga sort of plays quite a bit off him. Like Harris described him as a 9.5. So it's more of a 4-2-3-1.
Okay, so it's 4-2-3-1, those two playing up front. And obviously everyone knows what Lyle Taylor can do in the championship. Joined you guys back at the end of January, I think it was, obviously after his short spat at Wickham. Not really sure what happened there. And obviously that's water under the bridge, obviously, at this point. Started very well for you, obviously scored in his debut v Fleetwood, I think scored the win of that day, and obviously then got a brace, I think, a couple of games later. He was 3 goals in 4 games, 2 assists. But the last seven games, obviously, has been a bit of a barren run. I think only one assist in that time. Is he still the player to look out for, really, in the team? Is he the one that everyone's looking at?
Definitely. Like, anything good we do goes through Lyle Taylor. He obviously had those three games that he was out suspended were pretty poorly timed. They were three pretty big games, and then he comes back. I mean, he signs for Neil Harris, who got him playing. One thing you say about Lyle Taylor is, if you look for his career, for every Wickham, there's a Wimbledon. When you can get him playing, he's a hell of a player, and he's such a handful. And the Taylor that we saw under Harris was exactly that. Like, every game, he was so hard to play against. He was a real focal point. He was battling for everything, chasing everything, and he had real genuine quality. His assist for Kachunga up at Carlisle, like, outside of the boot cross straight onto Kachunga's head. It's like proper cut above sort of stuff. Obviously, he's got that in him, but there's one thing you say about Lyle Taylor: he's a very temperamental footballer. And the worry we've got a little bit is that we're going to get a very different Taylor back to the one that we saw under Harris before his suspension. I still think, given our squad, he's the one that can really make a difference. And as long as we can provide him with a chance, I still think he's the one that is most likely to take it. And even beyond that, he's so good at linking the play up that when we need to sort of... when we need to play direct, which we always do, it always has to be Taylor picking up on those long balls. So yeah, he's crucial. I think if he doesn't find a scoring boots, then he needs to find a scoring boots to scrape these points, because he's sort of capable of turning a game by himself. He's that sort of player. But yeah, still a bit sceptical that we're going to get a very different Taylor back to the one that we remembered before.
Shades of Sam Smith maybe last year for you guys, and going on a scoring run at the end of the season.
That's what we're all hoping for. Yeah. I think I tell you what, I think that at least with Taylor, the few times, even when he doesn't score or isn't involved directly in goals, like, he's always involved in the game. He always gets himself involved. Sometimes with Smith, you'd notice him just sort of linger on the fringes of a game. We played him out wide as well a lot when he was going through those runs. And I think, hope at least, that I'm right, that Taylor... like, always gets himself involved at least, and he can just be a big difference maker in that sense. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, big shades of Smith. Yeah.
Fair enough. Let's have a look at the weekend then. Score predictions coming into it. You've been bubbling full of positivity seemingly around Cambridge all through this podcast. Yeah. What are you going to be going for?
I mean, I'm pretty sure we'll lose like 2-0, but for the sake of feeling slightly positive, I will say that we'll nab a draw out of it, like a 1-1, and we'll score quite late, and then neither team will sort of think we'd rather not lose it than risk attacking, because it's such a big game. So I'll hope that we'll somehow get a draw out of it, but I'll go 1-1. But to be perfectly honest with you, I mean, I'm so resigned to losing that. It just wouldn't come as anything near a surprise.
I think a lot of Reading fans can empathise with that, with some of the runs we've been on. I remember earlier in the season, whenever we were going away, it was just like, I'd love to even predict a draw, but I can't even see it. Regular listeners of this podcast would know that my predictions are usually quite down as well. And I went on your podcast and predicted a 3-1 Reading win, which I'm starting to dread right now, because it's just got screams of like 1-0 Cambridge all over it, losing 6-0 in the week, having new manager and all of that malarkey. But I will stick with that for continuity. So I'm not going on one and saying one thing and saying a different thing on ours. I'm going to go 3-1. So, but the biggest question of the lot, Jules, are you going to stay up this season? If you've got to pin your hat on.
Oh, that is a big question. Yeah, but like by the skin of our teeth, and only because I think this is a terrible, terrible League One season that we're getting away with it. So I'm going to say just about like last day of the season sort of thing. And only because I think this 5-point buffer is still there, even you know, this bad little spell like last night, still 5 points. The longer we can sort of, every game passes, it's still still a lot of points.
Every game that ticks on, that points total gets lower. You know, I think five seasons ago, we were thinking 47, 48 to stay up. Now it's about 44, I think. Might keep you up.
Yeah. We set up on 46 last year, which is only 7 points away, right? And like, you should think that there are two home games we could win in this spell. So I will say we're going to stay up, but anyone who's just listened to me go on about the state of our squad, like if we go down, I will have seen it coming, put it that way.
Yeah. Well, are you coming to the day ski on Saturday?
I am. First time.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, best of luck, obviously, for the season. Safe trip up or down to the Medeski, I should say, for you guys that we can. Hopefully it's a good game and hopefully you guys can get through this season. And however you get over the line, hopefully you can get over that line and so can we. And we can play again next year in League One. So thank you so much.
As you said, 16th and 17th this year, we'll be absolutely fine with that. I don't care which way around it is.
Absolutely. We'd both be ecstatic with that, I think. So. Thank you so much, obviously, for joining us again, Jules. Under the Abbey podcast, if you want to go and give them a follow over on Twitter, get your Cambridge United updates, obviously, in this crucial relegation battle, go and give them a follow. We will be back on Sunday reviewing the game, of course, win, lose or draw. We will be back. If you have enjoyed this podcast, of course, give it a 5-star rating on your podcast of choice. Give us a like on all of the socials to keep up to date with the latest Reading FC content and EPR content. And until then, I've got nothing else to say. It's been quite a long podcast today, so hopefully you've enjoyed it. I've loved hosting it for you guys. I've been Matt Lansley, and this has been the Elm Park Rules Preview Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.